Hello, good afternoon and welcome to Between the Lines. My name is Keith Redmond. Today on the show I'm joined by Councillor Brian McDowell, Labour Councillor for the Donegal Ward, Dublin City Council. I'm also joined by Martin O'Sullivan, who's representative of People Before Profit. Today we're going to speak about the march, the proposed march by ICTU through the various cities across the country. And ICTU are hoping to get 100,000 people to come out. Ostensibly, this march is against the austerity policies of the government. And it's an interesting one because I suppose ICTU being allied with the Labour Party and Labour Party being in government implementing these policies, there's a bit of a conflict there, and we'll maybe get to speak to Councillor McDowell about that. In addition, later in the show, we'll be speaking about the Garda reforms, which have received such discussion, the controversial Garda reforms coming as they did on after the tragic death of Garda Adrian Donoghue. So first of all, we'll go to Councillor McDowell, Brian. Brian, the march that's planned for next Saturday, first of all, will you be going on the march?
Well, Keith, in your introduction, you made out that the march was completely about the austerity measures being implemented by the government. My understanding is the march is about the bank deal and the unsustainable debt that was put on this country by Fianna Fáil and agreed by other parties in the last government. And I certainly agree that the debt is unsustainable. I certainly agree with what I'm reading about what the march is about. And I certainly, if people from the Labour Party go on that march, I would certainly have no problem with it. Would I be on it myself? I may well be.
You haven't decided yet.
It's not about not deciding. I absolutely agree that the bank deal that was done back in 2008, and as I say, agreed by Fianna Fáil and other parties, including Sinn Féin, was a deal that shouldn't have been done, and the Labour Party were the only party at that stage that voted against it. So the Labour Party has continually argued that the bank deal was a bad deal, the guarantee was a bad deal, and we continually argued, as our party leader did in the last election, that it needed to be changed. And that's what we spent the last 2 years trying to do. We've got some changes to it, and we hope before the 31st of March we will have a deal on the promissory note.
Eamon Gilmore famously said during that election that it was going to be Labour's way or Frankfurt's way, meaning that this bank bailout, as you say, was unsustainable, and in effect Labour were going to get in there and get rid of it. We have changes to the interest rate. We've had changes offered to the terms or suggested to the term. But Labour now are not saying that the bank bailout is going to be written off. Effectively, they're saying we're just looking for a better deal. Is that where the Labour Party is right now?
Well, we said at the time that this was a bad deal for Ireland, and it was a bad deal for Ireland. And as I said, we were the only party that voted against it. We have got changes to it in the first 2 years of government. It's been very difficult. The negotiations have been very difficult on it. We are coming to crunch times. We have a deal on we didn't pay the promissory note last year, and I don't expect it, and I hope we don't pay it this year, and that we get a long-term deal on the promissory note, which will bring big savings to this country.
When you say we didn't pay it last year, you mean we didn't pay it at a current expenditure, but it was actually paid. It was just put on the national debt, isn't that right?
Well, I'm not quite sure that's correct. There was a very complicated deal involving Bank of Ireland and
which Bank of Ireland got paid for.
But the ECB did get their money.
Well, it's a long-term bond, far as I can remember,
exactly.
was issued at the time.
Yeah.
We never said that in the first 24 hours of government that we would unilaterally renege on the bank deal and look for a write-down. That was never said. It might have been said by some media, although I remember correctly, most of the media said there was no deal could ever be done. There could be no changes, I think is what Fianna Fáil said at the time and other parties said at the time. This is the best deal we can do. As you said, we have had changes over the first 2 years. We are now coming to crunch times on the promissory note and on the bank's deal, hopefully later in the year. Let's wait and see what happens with them. But I hope and expect that we will get a deal because our debt is unsustainable. And when we talk about the march on the 9th of February, that is my understanding is what the march is against. And if that's what it's against, I'm certainly in favour of it.
Martin, you represent People Before Profit. I'm sure you'd agree there with Brian that the bank debt that the last government took on is unsustainable at this stage. We all recognise there's no way we're going to be able to pay this money back. What Brian is suggesting there is that there is some kind of deal in the offing or that this current government are going to get a better deal. Do you have confidence in that?
No, I don't think the government will get a better deal. I think the government will spin it out for a long time until they can look like they got something better. But actually, in reality, I think what they plan to do is kick the can 50 years down the road. They don't want to really upset the Troika at all. They simply want to keep it going in their own way to make it look like they got something, but actually they're not getting anything. And if we see that, you know, every time they come out and say they've got a deal, they spun it last May that they had a deal, that seems to have fallen apart. They didn't get a deal on legacy bank debt. They didn't get any deal at all. But I think even
that's not true. So, this is the usual nonsense that comes out before people for profit who actually don't want a deal, so they can go out on the streets and protest at will. People like don't actually want the deal, in my view, at all.
And what was the deal that you feel that they got?
There was an agreement at European level about the sovereign debt, about legacy debt. Mm. And let's see where the deal leaves us. Let's see where, you know, we can talk about what deal might be done in the promissory note. Let's see what the deal is, if a deal is done. And then let's discuss it, whether it's good enough or not.
But why should
people like Martin we wouldn't get any deal. There'd be no changes made here whatsoever. Now they're talking about the deal won't be good enough. Now they're talking about, you spent so long trying to negotiate the deal. Let's wait and see and then discuss what we're talking about.
Martin, it is true to say that we have had a reduction in interest rate. It's true to say that we've had some changes to the terms and conditions, as it were, of the loan. And last May, we had a political agreement, if nothing else, that Ireland would be able to break the link between the sovereign and the bank. So would it be fair to say there's some progress toward an ultimate deal, even though we haven't finalised it?
There seems to be some progress being spun, but we don't seem to be actually getting a deal in writing. And once again, that deal that was done last year, now I'm not a financial expert and I tried to read it, and after about 2 hours of trying to understand it, the only thing I could come away with was that Bank of Ireland got paid a hefty commission for moving that debt from one account to another and back again, is all I could see that they did. But it didn't actually reduce the burden of debt on the people. It didn't stop the austerity that's coming on people's lives on a daily basis. And I simply say, why should we do a deal between two private institutions? If AIB and a bank in Germany lent money or did a deal with each other, why is the responsibility of the Irish people? It's not. They're two private businesses. They were the businesses who campaigned for light touch regulation, who constantly said that the government shouldn't interfere in the market, that the market should be left to rule itself. Well, if they wanted that, how come they now say, oh, but we made a mess and now we have to get bailed out?
We may all agree on that, but at the time our democratically elected government representing us as a people took that debt on. And so therefore it becomes the people's debt. Now, we may all disagree with why they did that or should they have done that, but the fact is we now own that debt.
But a government could repudiate it, could say, sorry, this
and then what happens, Martin? This is the populist thing. Let's repudiate the debt, let's not pay it, and let's see what happens. Let's cross our fingers and wait and see what happens. What will happen? What do you think will happen?
What do you think would happen?
If I go into my bank manager tomorrow and say, I'm not paying back my mortgage, and I go in the next day and ask for another loan, do you think he's going to give it to me?
I think what'll happen is, if we repudiate the debt, we'll actually be in a better position.
Argentina is?
No, I don't think we have to go down the road of Argentina. Look at
Iceland. That's what they did.
Look at Iceland.
Well, no, look what Argentina did. Interest rates are now over 20%.
Yeah.
That's where they are.
But look at Iceland. Look at Iceland. Their economy is starting to grow again after they safeguarded the deposits of the deposit holders up to a certain value in their own currency. And they also said the debts belong to private institutions.
But we didn't say that, Martin. You have to get back to the point.
The point is, Martin, in Iceland, their Anglo bank was a bank called Landsbanki.
Yeah.
And we've just seen them go through the international courts with Britain and the Netherlands, and effectively Britain and the Netherlands were trying to say that Iceland did owe the debts of Landsbanki to their investors. And in fairness to Iceland, they won their case.
Yeah.
But they won their case because Iceland's sovereign government never took the debts on. Our government, on our behalf, did take those debts of Anglo on. So therefore, from a legal perspective, we own those debts. So we can't do what Iceland did.
But I think we could try and do what Iceland did, and that would strengthen our negotiating position, because we would say, okay, we're not prepared to take these on. This is a deal that shouldn't have been entered into, even it was entered into, and we're, as a democratically elected government, we are now choosing to reverse it.
Brian, you've said a couple of occasions that the bailout debt is unsustainable. We can't pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you look at the fact that for every man, woman and child, we've taken on €9,000 worth of debt, in comparison with in Europe, I think it's somewhere around €100 worth of debt,
yeah,
to bail out the banks across Europe. So we have an incredibly disproportionate debt burden to bear for bailing out, in effect, Europe's banks. However, as I've just been discussing with Martin, that debt is on our shoulders now. Our government took that on our behalf. So you're saying we can't pay it. If we can't get a deal, to repudiate this debt in a legal way. Do you ever foresee a situation where we're effectively going to have to say, well, I'm sorry, but we literally can't pay it and we are going to repudiate the debt?
Well, look, nobody knows what the negotiations are, what's going on behind closed doors. Obviously, negotiations have been ongoing now for the last 2 years. I hope and I expect that we will get a deal, particularly on the promise, you know, before the 31st of March. If we don't get a bank deal, then we are in serious trouble. As a country, we are borrowing billions every year, not just to pay back the bankers, but to actually pay nurses, to keep our hospitals open, to keep our schools open, to pay social welfare. That's what we're borrowing for. So the line that we're all, you know, any taxes that are being paid is going to pay back the bankers is not true. It's a nice populist line, but it's actually not true. We need a deal on the bank debt. There's no doubt about it. Everybody realises that. And I just hope that we get it. And I certainly hope we will know, I guess, before the 31st of March, whether we get a deal on the promissory note or not.
Trade union leaders, including David Begg and Jack O'Connor, have all said that the policies that the government are pursuing at the moment, as they call them, the austerity policies, are the wrong policies. And we need pro-growth policies. And this is the reason why we're in an ever-decreasing spiral. So would you share that view, or do you think there's any validity to that view?
I think you have to take cognizance of actually where we are at the moment and what debt we have and in this country and what was inherited by this government. Yes, absolutely, I agree there should be a stimulus package put together. There was a stimulus package put together by Brendan Howland of $2.5 billion some months ago in relation to building schools and other infrastructure across the country. And I hope that that's starting to come on stream now. The big thing at the moment is jobs. We need to get people back to work. That's not going to happen overnight. As I say, there's, I think it's about 429,000 or something around that figure that's unemployed. We have stabilised the economy. I don't think we've done any more than that apart from stabilise it from where we got it. And we now need to start growing as an economy.
Jack O'Connor was calling for a €10 billion stimulus to be taken from the National Pension Reserve Fund and various other places. And this was going to create 100,000 jobs. What do you think of that plan?
I'm not sure how much people think is still left in the National Pension Reserve Fund, because everybody seems to think that this is going to pay for everything. And it's not. Let's be clear, it's not. And what Fianna Fáil did the last time was throw money at everything. So, let's put a €10 billion surplus plan in place. What's it going to do? Like, what's it going to build? Like, what's actually behind the plan? It's great to say we should have a stimulus, and we should. But Brendan Howland actually put meat on the bones of that of a €2.5 billion surplus. Mm. That took 6 to 12 months to come forward with and to bring it into play. Yes, of course we need a stimulus. We need to get people back to work. But we need to put that plan together. The Labour Party aren't against a stimulus plan for this country. We're not. We are. We are campaigning hard to get it. But we have to put meat on the bones of that plan.
Martin, as a representative of People Before Profit, you'd probably, I would imagine, be in favour of some kind of Keynesian stimulus where the government borrows money or finds money and starts building roads and building hospitals and building all these things to get people back to work. Is that the... Would you share Jack O'Connor's view on what we need to do?
I would share it so far that we need... It would be a good idea to have some sort of stimulus to help rebuild the country, to fix the infrastructure where we've infrastructural problems, to get people back to work.
What happens when that money runs out? Those people just go back to the dole.
Well, it depends on what you build. Depends on what you do.
If we're building roads and hospitals and schools.
If we're building roads and hospitals and schools, you know, that leads to a more efficient country. If you have people who are healthier, who can commute and move through the economy more efficiently, and you have, for example, if you build a broadband infrastructure, but the money we put
into
building
broadband infrastructure, Pat Rabbit has already announced it.
Yeah, but if you know, if you built a broadband infrastructure that had been put with the money into Anglo-Irish, the $4 billion would have built the world's best broadband.
So if I gave you a magic wand now and I said, okay, we're going to have the best roads in Europe, we're going to have the best broadband in Europe, we're going to have the best hospitals and the best schools in Europe. Mm-hmm. And then the money runs out. So where are people going to go to work the next day?
Where are people going to work? I think these things generate their own momentum. If you look at an economy. Now, an economy, the Irish economy doesn't exist on its own in outer space. It exists as part of the global economy. And you have to look at things in a global way as well. if there is a global recession, there's no way that a tiny little country like Ireland can have this booming great economy.
So in effect, what you're saying is this stimulus that you're advocating will be a short-term fix, and afterwards there's nothing to replace it unless somebody comes in from outside of Ireland, and another multinational boom, presumably, drawn by our broadband and our fancy roads, and gives everybody jobs. Is that
no, I wouldn't say another multinational boom. I'd say if we started investing also in our people, in the education system, in research and development, and not just for commercial gain, but for actual things that people need in their lives.
Who will pay for these things if they're not for commercial gain?
Who will pay for them? I think that those things are paid for by trading with other countries, trading with other people who have services that we need. And we can't go down the road of, well, let's lower our corporation tax to the absolute lowest, we suck up all the jobs and we beggar our neighbours. We can't do that. That's not going to work. Because we need a country that is, it has something to offer the world, and the world has something to offer it. Now, these are big ideas, and they're not easy to implement at all, and they can't be implemented on a country by country basis. I think they have to be implemented on a global basis.
So barring a worldwide global socialist revolution, is there any other solution that you have for Ireland after the Keynesian boom?
After a Keynesian boom?
After the stimulus?
Well, if you look at Keynesian economics, Keynesian economics was never revolutionary. The idea was to fill in the gap between where you had a dip in private investment, you poured in public money, and that brought the economy back out. And the idea was then that private investment would start investing again. Mm. That is just a way of managing capitalism, right? If you're talking about revolutionary change, you're then talking about something that is completely different and would be very difficult to explain in the confines of a single programme. But
we'll invite you back, yeah, and I will have a one-on-one with you. You can tell me all about this socialist revolution.
Okay, no problem.
Brian, if you're going to go on this march, and other members of the Labour Party are going to go on this march, you're ostensibly, yes, you're right, the trade union movement have been very careful to make this march about objecting to the bank bailout. But you know as well as I do that the austerity policies are going to come up in this. It's going to be, if not hijacked, certainly issues. People like Richard Boyd Barrett and stuff are going to bring up austerity at the march. So is it going to become very uncomfortable for Labour Party members at this march?
I don't think so. As I said, I think the march, as far as I know, is about arguing against the bank deal, and Labour Party are the one party that has done that continually from 2008 onwards. So I don't see how it's uncomfortable. Look, we're in a...
But the Labour Party are implementing the policies that the trade union movement itself is against. And yeah. I mean,
well, that's a broad statement.
Well, if we just come back a bit on where the Labour Party is coming from. The Labour Party were formed by the trade union movement. It's partly funded by the trade union movement at the moment. Its personnel are interchangeable. In effect, I can think of maybe Joan Burton is the only cabinet minister who's not a former trade union official. So to say that the trade union movement and the Labour Party are two separate entities is quite frankly farcical.
But I'm not arguing that.
Right. So we now have a situation where it's a family at war. The trade union movement are against austerity. Labour Party are implementing austerity.
Well, the Labour Party aren't for austerity.
No, but that's they're implementing the policies that the trade Labour union Party movement is against.
Well, it's very easy, I guess, not to be in government, to be in opposition to government and to make the case for it. We're in government. We inherited a position of an unsustainable debt in this country, and we are implementing policies that we think will move us forward to build a sustainable economy going forward. The one thing Martin just doesn't talk about whatsoever. We have to build a sustainable economy that just isn't built on a bubble again.
Do you not think David Begg and Jack O'Connor understand that?
I think there's a lot of agreement between David Begg, Jack O'Connor and Eamon Gilmore on a lot of issues.
But Jack O'Connor and David Begg have both said that the government's policies are wrong, that they're causing the problems to get worse.
Jack and David clearly want the stimulus package and think, as they've come out and said, about the $10 billion stimulus package. And the Labour Party aren't against the stimulus package whatsoever, but it doesn't happen overnight. And the National Pension Reserve Fund is not the end of everything. You just can't go in and dip your fingers into that purse again and just continually try and save the country to the National Pension Reserve Fund. We have to build a sustainable economy going forward, not something that, once again, after a couple of years of a bubble, will collapse all around us.
But what is a sustainable economy?
That's what the Labour... Well, it's certainly not about repudiating debt and leaving the debt on the shoulders of our kids going forward. This is about building real jobs. Jobs for the future. Not about the populist nonsense that comes from People Power Profit and the Richard Boyd Barrett of this world.
Now, if you're saying that the Labour Party is all about building jobs and sustainable jobs, presumably Labour Party has a vision of where these jobs are going to come from.
At the moment, our exports are at the highest ever. We need to, it's the domestic market that we need to look at, small Indigenous Irish businesses that we need to promote. And if you look at some of the measures that were taken in the last budget, they were there to help small Indigenous Irish businesses. That's what we're looking to do. But can I just go back on something? You know, we talked about how we're going to do a number of things. And we talked about the last budget and so forth. Like, there was something in the last, and this is something that Jack O'Connor and David Begg do agree with. Things like wealth taxes that haven't been covered by any of the media from the last budget. There's 500 million in a full year of new wealth taxes that came across in the last budget. That's something I think Jack and David do agree with.
What do you define as a wealth tax?
And there are something like a property tax that's in every single country and supported by every socialist party across Europe is a wealth tax. But of course, the populist nonsense again from People Who Are Profit, who want to just be popular. The people don't buy that. They just don't buy that. They know the position we're in at the moment.
Well, why
yes,
did so
it's
many
difficult.
People refuse to register last year?
Well, 73% in Dublin City Council did register.
A
so what about the 73%? You don't represent them at all, obviously.
73%
you don't represent them at all. You did this with bin charges as well. You marched people up the hill. You left them at the top of the hill and you left the Labour Party there to look to sort out the problem that you brought into. That's what you did and that's what you're doing again. Let's have posters up all around the place. Oppose this, oppose that. Seriously, is there any solutions? Or do you actually just want revolution? Continual revolution without
Martin,
any problem?
It has been suggested here today and it's been suggested many times before that the populist kind of positions taken by People Before Profit are being taken not with any fiscal alternative in mind, but simply because it's politically expedient to do so. Because, let's face it, when people are hurting, they want somebody to stand up and say, I'm against this. So therefore, we may see more, for example, People Before Profit TDs get into the Dáil next time on the back of this. But what Brian is saying is that there's nothing behind it. There's no substance. There's no other way. There's no grand plan. Is there something there that you can tell us about?
I think there is another way. There is another way that if we, for example, now these things sound quite abstract when you say them, but if we start to look at an economy that is based on people's needs, not on profit, not on, you know, convincing people that, you know, Vodafone is better than O2 or O2 is better than Vodafone, that's based on actual real needs. And we start to do that. But that's a discussion that has to be had between a lot more people than just two people in a room. But what I would say about the property tax is this. The property tax is not a tax on yachts. It's not a tax on big wine collections. It's a tax on the home that people live in. And people have to, in Ireland...
It's an asset-based tax.
But it's not an
asset-based
tax. It would be fair to say that the biggest assets that people own are their houses. So, I mean...
People don't own it as an asset. They own it as somewhere to live. There's a difference between someone who buys four or five
houses.
But
you would agree that, I mean, I can't think of any country in the EU that doesn't have a property tax, and that's including France, which has property taxes and wealth taxes.
I
mean, you know, so I think Brian's point that, you know, People Before Profit are probably the only socialist party that are against property taxes in Europe would be fair.
I know, for example, the SP are against, the Socialist Party of Ireland are against property taxes. There's a Socialist Party in the United Kingdom who were against the poll tax.
But that was a flat tax across all income levels. I mean, this property tax has been designed. It has two tiers. It has this so-called mansion tax element to it at the end. Presumably that was there to help Labour Party TDs face the media afterwards. But at the same time, why do you think that it's not progressive? The more your house is worth, the more you pay.
But you see, you don't decide what your house is worth, right? Your house is... said to be worth a figure by someone else who comes in and decides that.
But that's not the case at all. It's self-assessment.
Ah, but the self-assessment can be questioned by the revenue commissioners.
Yeah, well, if I self-assess that my house is worth 10,000, I think somebody probably should be there to be able to actually argue that point.
In fairness, I think in an urban area where you have a row of houses and everybody's pretty much around the same level, you know, that's where the market says the house is worth rather than the person or rather than someone else. So, I mean... when we get to a stage where we need to bring in tax, we need to bring in tax from all different elements. We're at a 52% income tax over €32,000. Some would say, you know, we're at maybe the outer limits of what we can get on people's incomes. We have to look for alternative tax streams. Where else would you find it if you didn't have a property tax?
I would look at people on very, very high wages who are working, for example, for the banks, and say that they have to pay much, much higher taxes. Why can't they share some of the pain? For example, the tax break that was brought in for that Fintan O'Toole did an article in the Irish Times for, where you had executives brought in who were working for multinationals who got €5,000 a year a tax break to allow their kids to go to private schools.
We're looking for €1 billion from this property tax eventually, half a billion initially, €1 billion in the full. The IMF have said that they want to get €1 billion out of this. Do you think that by taxing bankers' school fees, we're going to get €1 billion?
No. I think there are other taxes. You can go look at taxes on that Vincent Brown has estimated would be worth €780 million is the private pensions relief. That's going to a lot of very high earners, because most people who are earning an average industrial wage can barely afford it.
But you know that we did this at the last budget. Yeah, we actually brought that in.
The last budget have capped pensions now at a €60,000 benefit per annum. So that has been done.
Yeah, but €60,000 benefit per annum, right, is a tax that's on some pensions. But there's a year.
This is going to bring in €250 million a year in the full year.
Yeah, but there's a year for the pension.
Are you in agreement with that? You are?
I'd have to look at it and see who is actually being taxed.
Well, it's quite clear. The cap is at €60,000 for pensions. Are you not in agreement with that?
I'd have to look at it. I can't say because I'm not...
But it's been brought in by the budget, so it's the details are in the budget.
We're going to take a little break. We'll come back with this argument because it's an interesting argument to carry over into the public sector as well. So we'll carry that on after the break. And you're very welcome back to Between the Lines. My name is Keith Redmond, and today I'm joined by Labour Dublin City Councillor Brian McDowell from the Donoghue Ward, and I'm also joined by Martin O'Sullivan, a representative of People Before Profit. Before the break, we were discussing the ICDU March, which is going to be taking place across the country next Saturday the 9th. It's a march ostensibly against the bank bailout, and I've been suggesting that perhaps issues related to the austerity will also... themes related to austerity will also come forward. We just want to finish up on this because we want to move on to our second topic today. But before the break, we were discussing the cap that had been placed on private sector pensions. So in effect, the last budget, it was €60,000 maximum. After that, you would receive no relief. This is a per annum basis. After that, you would receive no benefit. Brian, does this new regime apply to the public sector?
My understanding, it doesn't from the start. Like as you know, Crow Park 2 is being negotiated at the moment, and €1 billion has to be found, I think, in savings in the next 12 months in that deal. So I think all those discussions and all those things are under discussion at the moment.
So why couldn't the government impose that on the public sector in the same way as they imposed it on the private sector?
Well, to be fair to the public sector, they have taken a number of different pension levies and USC increases over the last 12 to 18 months. And I think the majority have taken about a 14% decrease in their wages.
So you think that they should still be allowed to have pensions of over €60,000 a year?
I think there are negotiations ongoing at the moment. I think anybody over €60,000 should be capped. I've no doubt that's the way it should be.
Martin, the private sector will now have this new cap in place. The public sector, as we've heard, may not have this new cap in place. Do you think that this kind of two-tier pension arrangement is a fair arrangement?
Well, once again, I am not a pensions expert, and when you read some of this, it can be extremely confusing. But I would say to divide the public sector and the private sector is what the government have tried to do. It's what Fianna Fáil tried to do. And it looks like it's what Fine Gael and the Labour government are trying to do, to set up a two-tier system where you have a public and private sector divided. And
how are they trying to do that, Martin? How are the Labour Party trying to do that?
Well, for example, with the pensions and with what's gone on recently.
You just said you didn't know about the pensions, so...
I'm not an expert on pensions.
But then how are the Labour Party looking to...
If that regime was in place and public sector workers could receive pensions of over €60,000, which was illegal in the private sector, that would be a two-tier apartheid system.
What I said was negotiations are ongoing in Crow Park 2 at the moment. And let's see let's not prejudge any negotiations. Let's see what comes out of them.
We've got to remember also about the pensions levy. That the pensions levy that came out of people's pensions doesn't actually increase their pensions, because I shared a house with a guy who was a teacher And, you know, he doesn't get anything extra on his pension since the pension levy was taken out. It was just the idea that, you know, we're taking more supposedly for public sector workers to pay for their pensions. But they actually do pay for their pensions. Mm. And they always
It would
did.
Be fair to say that if you stayed in the public sector for 30 years and you paid the percentage that you've been asked to pay towards your pension, you still would not be able to fund the pension that you get at the end if it was in a private sector. So in effect, the public sector are getting a fantastic deal because they're not actually financing their pensions.
But if you look at the whole pensions industry in Ireland, right, most...
Well, no, let's just look at the public sectors.
Well, no, I think you can't take it in isolation.
Ah, you can, because they don't actually have a fund. It's funded out of current revenue.
Yes, it's funded out of current revenue.
A public sector worker does not build up a fund in the same way as a private sector worker does.
But a private sector worker artificially is building up a fund. Because, and I'll explain that. When you're building up a fund, that fund is actually paid for, yes, by the money you put into it. By the way, you lose approximately 30% of it in fees and charges, right? But that fund is actually not just your money. It's the money that comes in from all over different places. Because if it was just your money, as soon as you take it out, the company that was managing it would be gone. So it's a fund that comes from... current workers, and also from your payment.
No, all of the money in the private sector is your money that went in.
It's your money that went in, right? But for the actual money to be worth anything, right, you still need a continuously running economy.
Well, no, the investment return on it, and that's why it can go up as well as down, as the ads would tell us.
But so, it's gone hugely down.
Yeah, absolutely, at the moment, yeah.
But
okay.
even over the last 15 years, the average return on an Irish pension before charges were taken out was 1%.
Yeah, I think we can definitely have another show on pension charges alone.
Good.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on to our second topic. Our second topic relates to the reforms that Minister Alan Shatter is implementing at the moment with respect to the Gardaí. As you may be aware, 95 Garda stations have closed, and I think a further 5 are due to close. So in total, 100 Garda stations. In addition, he's looking to make €60 million savings on Garda pay over the next 3 years. This will be done through a combination of overtime, premium pay, weekend allowances, that kind of thing. The Garda sergeants and inspectors have pulled out of the Croke Park agreement on foot of the suggestions that have been made by Alan Shatter, saying that there's no more left in the kitty. And the Garda Representative Association, who represent rank and file Gardaí, are due to make their decision, I believe, on Monday as to whether to pull out of the Croke Park agreement. What is the Labour Party's take on this, Brian? Are you in favour, obviously, you're implementing them presumably in government, are you in favour of Alan Shatter's reforms?
Well, first of all, I'm disappointed that the Garda representatives have pulled out of the negotiations under Croke Park 2. I think it would have been better for everybody concerned if they had stayed in and argued their case within the confines of the room. I think we have to put some facts on the table in relation to the Garda station closures. There is a plan to close, obviously, 100 Garda stations across the country. Out of those 100 Garda stations, 98% are at this stage open part-time. 94% of them are open for 3 hours a day. 88% of them are served by just one Garda. And there's only 5% of them that would be served by 3 Garda or over. This isn't about taking Garda away from the local community. This is about actually putting them on the streets in their local community. So they're not sitting behind a desk for 3 to 6 hours or whatever it might be. This is about freeing up their time so they can be seen on the streets in their community. That's what the reforms are
about.
So
those Gardaí would be driving around those rural communities for those hours that they would have been in the police station.
Yes, exactly. Right. That's what it's about. That's what the reform is about. And I must say, I listened to a programme before this on RTA, hysterical nonsense coming from some of the media, in my view, on this. I can understand any reform has to be communicated properly and the facts have to be put on the table. I don't think the facts are being discussed in this manner at all. If we look at what do we want? Do we want Gardaí, highly trained, sitting behind a desk in a rural community station? Or do we want them out pounding the streets, being visible in their community? I know which one I want.
From the perspective of people who live in a rural community, we're all dubs here. We live in the city centre. I mean, we're a mile from one Garda station, probably 3 miles from Malahide Garda station. So we're surrounded by Garda stations. We feel the comfort and security that offers us.
Well, do I feel a comfort at Coolock Garda Station that they're out from you?
Would you feel less comfort or more comfort if they weren't there?
I feel the comfort from seeing a Gardaí on the street in my community. I don't feel a comfort from them knowing that there's a Coolock Garda Station or a Heaney Garda Station.
So if you rang the Gardaí and you knew that they were 5 minutes from your house, that would offer you no comfort.
But that's not what we're saying here when they close the Garda Stations. Well, they're still going to be in their community.
Yeah, well, when you ring, from a rural person's point of view, their post offices are closing. The Garda stations now are closing. Yeah. So the visual aspect of that is that the heart of their communities is beginning to close down. Can you understand that perspective?
I absolutely understand. And I think the communication on this has been quite poor, to be fair, because I don't think the facts are out there whatsoever and what the reforms are meant to be doing. This is not about taking Gardaí out of the community. This is about creating community Gardaí, as the Garda Commissioner himself has said. There are 13,500 Gardaí employed at the moment. Although, if you look at, I know Fianna Fáil have been very vocal on this, their national recovery plan would have had it at 13,000, would have had it 500 fewer if that had been implemented. But there are 13,500. This is about freeing up Gardaí to go on the streets. If we look at comparisons in Scotland and Wales and other places like that, they have much less Garda stations, and they're quite rural as well. But Gardaí and how they police the community, it has changed over the last 100 years, and we need to change with it.
Martin, would it be fair to say that the scattering of Garda stations across the country is really a hangover from when Britain ran the country, and they were in essence the Britain's kind of power in all of those rural communities? We've moved on since then. We're now looking at a 21st century Garda presence. We've helicopters, we've faster cars, we've better roads, we can get to places far quicker. I mean, what Brian is suggesting is that the Gardaí are just not going to be physically located in a building, but they'll still be ever present in those communities still. Does that give you comfort?
I personally have never taken comfort from knowing that there is guards anywhere. I have issues with the way that the police force is run with this country. Very strong issues. I mean, if you look at what's happening down in Rossport and places like that, I have issues with the way the actual police force is actually run. I don't think that, just if people feel this safety with guards around, I think that in effect is an illusion. But the question is, why do people feel unsafe in the first place? Is it because the economy is in a mess and that they know that the number of burglaries is going to rise, that they know that you're going to get an increase in people who are actually acting in desperation, wrongfully acting in desperation, but still acting out of desperation. When you see drug treatment centres being closed down as part of the cutbacks, and then, you know, all this focus on guards. I don't know why, if the same focus, if the same media focus had not been on the closure of a couple of the drug treatment centres, even in this area, that, you know, and the closure of community centres. I think those things are far more important.
If you look at this again from the perspective of somebody who lives in a rural community, I mean, very recently we had some very violent burglaries in rural communities in Donegal, older people in particular being targeted. An older person living alone in the countryside is bound to feel somewhat vulnerable. Now, in as much as they're looking at the greater economic perspective on this, when it comes down to their front door, they're more concerned with the fact that, will a guard arrive if I call the Gardaí? So do these proposals, do you think, Brian is suggesting these proposals will not impact on the Gardaí that are actually in the area. Do you think that it will, or is that smoke and mirrors?
Well, my parents are from Wexford, and they live in a rural part of Wexford. And their attitude is, well, and I'm only speaking from talking to them and talking to people who live in Wexford, their attitude is, well, if I can get a guard, if I need one, I'm quite happy. A lot of people are a bit confused about whether or not these rural stations closing down will actually make much of a difference to them. But people do feel in rural communities that everything is moving towards towns, that they're having to pay, for example, extra septic tank charges and things like that, that are not incurred by people living in towns. And a lot of them do feel that they're very isolated. And they're both physically isolated, but a lot of them feel that they're politically isolated as well, that they don't really have the same power that people living in large urban areas have. And I think that we are going to have a look. And then once again, it's very hard to answer all these questions on this programme. We are going to have a look at what it constitutes a community, how you build it up, how you can actually service rural communities, not just with policing, but service them with postal services, with roads, with sewerage systems, all these sort of things.
And how we pay for it, presumably, as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to pay for any of these services.
No.
You want the services, but you actually don't think the people in this country should pay for them. You're campaigning against them paying service charges.
I'm campaigning against them paying service charges.
But you want the services.
That are unfair, because I think...
But you want the services. How will the country and the people, how will they pay?
They should
for these
be paid
services.
For by taxes on income.
Absolutely. So there's the big.
So basically,
big
what you're saying is that all of the services that everybody enjoys should be paid for by somebody else on their income.
No. I think that services should be paid for on the basis of general taxation.
But you just talked about wealth taxes earlier, and wealth tax is not on income.
We are now paying 52% tax on any income over €32,000.
And we have the most progressive tax system in the OECD.
I was just about to say, we do have the most progressive tax system in the OECD. The top 5% pay 50% of all income tax. So when you have a situation like that, is there a limit to your ambition when it comes to income tax?
It's not the limit of ambition to when it comes to income tax. It's the limit of what we can actually do with the money that we're spending. Ireland is a very wealthy country still.
What about the money we're borrowing to pay for these services? You are leading people up a hill again. Don't pay your services, but you still want the services. I have seen unbelievable motions come from your party and from people on the so-called left at Dublin City Council about we shouldn't pay for any services whatsoever, but don't cut the level of service.
We're not saying
like
that
it doesn't add up.
Services.
And let's be clear with people, it doesn't add up.
Services have to be paid for. But
by who?
By out of general taxation.
So hold on, you just talked about earlier about wealth taxes, and yet you're in agreement with wealth taxes. That's not coming out of income tax. I agree with you. We have to get away from the only tax you can have is income tax, and we have to move on to asset based taxes. I presume, like every socialist party in the world, you're agreeing with that.
So just let Martin answer those points. I mean, Martin, we are at a very high level of income tax in this country, and we are at a very level kicks in at a very low level of income.
Yeah.
So where is this extra buoyancy, if you like, in the system? Is it at a higher rate of tax? Is it at a lower level of income? Where does this enormous fund of money come to fund everything for services that people don't have to pay for as they go?
Well, I would say that the fund of money should come from I do think that 52% of your wages going at €32,000 is excessive, because that's quite a low wage compared to what it actually costs to live in this country.
So if we increase that to say €45,000, what that means is we have to get the same amount of tax, or presumably more, in at a higher level. So we're now going to 60%, 70%, 80% taxes.
No, but you could bring in a third band or something.
Okay.
See, once again...
So if you have a third band, I mean, I know that the Labour Party, in fact, in opposition, were calling for a third band. And it was going to be it was going to be, in effect, 59% tax when you added in everything. So 59% tax on income over 100,000. So an additional 7 points on what it is right now for people earning over 100,000.
Yeah.
Even at that point, it brings in 200 million or something. At that point, that still does not in any way fund the services, water, refuse, all the rest of it that you're talking about.
But if you bring in that tax and then you look at people who are earning even higher than that. Now, this is where we need an actual register of what is wealth, and even a discussion around in a society what exactly is wealth. I don't think the house that someone is living in should be regarded.
What would you consider to be an asset that could be considered a wealth for a tax?
I would think that an asset that performs, that does something, that has some sort of economic value. For example, let's say you have a fleet of jet aircraft. Right,
how many people in Ireland have fleets of jet aircraft?
No, but I'm just using this as a performing asset, right?
No, what I'm asking you is, on a general basis, we're looking for this alternative pool. We want to find this other pool of taxable wealth.
Yep.
You're saying that asset taxes are potentially this, wealth taxes, are offer us an opportunity. What are these assets that you're talking about?
Well, I would say an asset that's performing, right? An asset that gives you some
Give me an example.
Let's say you've something that you're using to generate a business out of, right? That at a certain point, once you're making a profit on that business, that you have to pay some of that back in tax.
That's called a corporation tax.
Yes, it is a kind of corporation tax.
So we already pay that tax.
But the corporation tax in this country, the effective rate of it, is not very high. A lot of corporations...
So now we're moving on to corporation tax, but I want to go back to the wealth taxes.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that there are this font of assets that can be taxed. I just want you to tell me give me one example of one.
Of a font of assets?
No, just give me one example of an asset that you could hit a wealth tax on.
I would say a wealth tax on things such as... it's a difficult thing of one off the top of my head. But
if you haven't thought of what they are, how can you possibly tell us how much money you're going to get from them?
Something like, if someone has three houses and a cellar full of very valuable wine and, you know, a yacht moored on the thing, that person should be liable for a wealth tax.
Okay. We're going to solve the economic problems by somebody who has a jet, has a yacht, and has a cellar full of wine.
And a wine cellar. Okay.
That's the people before profits solution
to
everything.
No, it's not. What I'm saying
sure the people listening today now are feeling a lot better with those policies being
implemented. We have to look and see what people have in this country. There is no register of wealth in this country. There's no way of knowing.
But are you saying that we should go into people's homes and ask them how many bottles of wine they have, what fancy records they have, and start to make up lists of people?
I'm not saying that we do that right
now.
Can I
ask a question? Capital gains tax, capital acquisition taxes, which were 20% when this government came into power, are now increased to 33%. I'm presuming you agree with that.
It sounds to be a good policy, but why wasn't a financial transaction tax introduced?
Hold on, I've asked you. So you agree with the policies that the Labour Party have introduced in the last two budgets in relation to increasing CAT and CGT from 20% to 33% and increasing DIRT?
Yeah, I think that's going in the right direction, yes.
Martin, could I ask you a question? Do you know of any tax that should be less?
A tax that should be less? Well, I'd say the property tax.
The
home tax should be gone.
Okay.
It's a tax.
And
I would also say
500 million that's going to be raised by that in a full year from people with jets and
wine sellers.
Bottles of wine.
Okay, no, so I just want to come to a few questions and queries that have come in on the text line. Dick O'Leary just wanted to direct a question to you, Brian, in effect saying basically you've lost Roisin Shortall, you've lost our local TD here, Tommy Bruin from the Parliamentary Party, you've lost your party chairman from the Parliamentary Party. These people are quintessentially Labour, and yet they can't live with the decisions that Labour are making. How do you square that circle?
Well, first of all, we also have 35 other people who have stayed within the Parliamentary Party. And who, unfortunately, you know there are difficult decisions to be made and have decided that they can look to the future and things will get better by the party.
But when your own chairman is saying that he can't live with Labour Party policies, is there something wrong with Labour Party policies?
I've worked with particularly Tommy and Roisin for many years, over 20 years, and I'm particularly sorry to see both Tommy and Roisin outside the Parliamentary Party. I think they made the wrong decision, to be quite honest. If you're in politics for 20 odd years looking to change things, I don't think you're going to do it to be a backbench independent TD. I think you've a better chance of changing things in government. Roisin was implementing a lot of policies in the primary healthcare sector, particularly on alcohol. And you know, Alex White is now going to bring them to fruition.
Were you happy with the way that she was supported when it came down to effectively a decision between her and James Riley?
Yes.
Happy with what happened with the Labour Party there?
I think Roisin got the full support of the Parliamentary Party and the party leader.
Roisin doesn't think so.
She
clearly doesn't think so. I think she did.
Okay. And the fact that your chairman is now not a member of the Parliamentary Party, does that worry you at all?
Well, Colin made the decision to vote against the last budget. Once again, I find that regretful. He's a chair of the Parliamentary Party elected by the members and he has a job to do. He feels he can do that job from outside the Parliamentary Party. As I say, I don't agree with him. I prefer if he had stayed in because you can't do anything from the opposition benches.
Do you think you
literally
resign?
Can't. The Labour Party spent long enough on the opposition benches without being able to implement any of our policies.
Do you think that these three deputies in particular were more suited to opposition?
Look, there is a case in the Labour Party and in a lot of left-wing parties that people prefer to protest rather than make decisions. I'm not saying particularly in Roisin and Tommy that that's the case. I really do regret about Roisin and Tommy leaving the parliamentary party. I don't, there's no point in me saying otherwise, I don't agree with the decision they made for the reasons I pointed out. There really is not a lot they can do in opposition.
Tommy's been expelled from the parliamentary party, I think, a half a dozen times.
A few times, yeah.
Do you think Tommy really should leave the Labour Party? He doesn't really agree with the Labour Party in any of the policy themes.
Well, that's a decision for Tommy. I've worked particularly with Tommy for the last 20 odd years, and I wouldn't like to see Tommy leave the Labour Party.
Okay. Michael, a caller called Michael has said to Keith, get your facts right. Ireland currently has the lowest tax rates. I'm not really too sure you're right on that, Michael. I mean, we've got 52% income tax on over €32,000, and as Brian was saying, we do have the most progressive tax system in the OECD. John and Santry phoned in and he said, it is not hysterical when reporting the slaughter of a Garda. The Guard should receive more resources. Now, John and Santry, I mean, I'm sure the rest of the panel will discuss this with you, but I don't really think anybody's suggesting that the dreadful murder of Garda Donoghue was related to resources. He was fully resourced, and indeed he was armed. It's just unfortunate we just had a hate-filled homicidal maniac who's decided to kill him. Brian, would you like to comment on that?
Well, that certainly wasn't what I was referring to. I think I was referring just basically to the Garda stations closing across the country. I do think we have the media, and I was listening to a programme before. I don't think the murder of the Gardaí had anything to do with the closure of any Garda stations. It's about some madman who took the life in a brutal manner.
Martin, do you think that the cutbacks that are now being implemented had an effect on the killing of Garda Donoghue?
I don't think cutbacks in the police did, but and once again, that's not to excuse the person who shot him, but I do think that if you continuously destroy an economy, that these sort of crimes get generated, and particularly what you will see is an increase, as you did in the 80s, an increase in attacks on very vulnerable people, such as elderly people in their own homes. You will see an increase in robberies, and you will see an increase in drug taking, because as people start to sink into despair, these sort of things inevitably go up. And I don't think you could say that, well, X cut caused the death of such and such a guard. But I think when you see the cuts overall in general, you can see that they lead to a less safe society for everyone.
Okay. Martin, I never asked you, actually. Will you be on the march next Saturday?
I definitely will be. And the household tax campaign, the campaign against the home tax, and we'll be on the march. They will bring their banners, and we definitely will be calling for the trade union movement to push much harder on the Labour Party to say, you know, this is not just about the bank bailout deal in isolation, it is about austerity as well. And also, there is a campaign within SIPTU at the moment to withdraw funds from the Labour Party.
Hold on. Let's get some facts right. That's wrong, Martin. There's legislation passed to ensure that the trade union group can't give funds to the Labour Party. It's legislation passed by Brendan Howland.
There's no funding
coming from the trade union movement to the Labour Party anymore.
The funding that we got last year can't be given this year because of legislation passed by the Labour Party.
That's nonsense.
Martin, I know about it, Martin. You don't. Again, you're talking nonsense.
Just let Martin talk. Has brought down 200 forms to his factory in Cork to get people to sign not to be paying money into the political fund, which was going to the Labour Party. And Jack O'Connor actually turned up at the factory when this happened because they got such a shock that this was happening. There is a campaign going out through SIPTU, and people have asked me for the forms, which I can get you, by the way, if anyone wants them.
But the
ban on corporate donations, as I understand it, did draw in the labor the trade union movement.
Yes.
So that's now the law of the land. So would it be fair to say that your campaign is probably a bit redundant?
Well, for the SIPTU still has a political fund that some of it still goes to the Labour Party, right? I don't know whether whether they have actually changed that funding now. But I know that there is a campaign on it.
I can tell you they have,
I think. You should probably check into that and save you
time. I'll check into it because I know that for a fact that several members of SIPTU have filled in this form and have said they do not want any money of theirs going to the Labour Party.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, I'd like to thank my guest today, Brian McDowell, councillor for Dunamead Ward and Dublin City Council, Labour councillor, and Martin O'Sullivan, People Before Profit. I'd like to thank you all for listening. My name is Keith Redmond, and we'll see you on Between the Lines next week.